Welcome to RISE, Radio Internet Story Exchange, a weekly public affairs program helping you to ask questions, find answers, and distinguish the truth from the lie. I'm Kelly O'Romaris. Today we begin a four-part series on energy called The End of the Age of Oil. To understand why 9/11 happened, and to understand why in mid-October of 2002, the United States is on the brink of an imperial war of aggression against Iraq, one must understand that the world is facing an energy crisis, a crisis based not on market or political forces, but on physical reality. The world is running out of the cheap oil and natural gas that powered the Industrial Revolution and the beginning of the Information Age. Over the next 4 weeks, we will explore in depth the scientific data concerning the coming shortages, the implications of this energy crisis on geopolitics and economics, possible alternative energy sources and strategies, and the impact of the end of the age of oil on human culture. We begin with Michael C. Rupert, publisher and editor of the monthly newsletter From the Wilderness, an independent journalist with 25 years of experience researching covert operations. Rupert is the leading investigator into U.S. government foreknowledge of the September 11th attacks. For the past year, he has given a series of lectures titled The Truth and Lies of 9/11, which has drawn on government documents and media reports worldwide to debunk the notion that the United States government had no foreknowledge of the attacks and no idea that aircraft could be used as weapons. On October 4, 2002, Rupert gave his lecture at Lowell High School Auditorium in San Francisco, California. Speaking to an audience of about 500 people, Rupert explained the ties between 9/11, oil, and war. What follows are excerpts of that lecture.
What this is about giving you a map. I would submit to you that much of the difficulty and the animosity that exists, that has existed, not so much between me and the Bush administration, because we're both following the same map. I know what map they're following, but the animosity that has existed to some extent within the progressive community and my work is because we're following two different maps. The issue is about reality, fearless, psychologically and spiritually healthy demand and quest for nothing but the truth, no matter how scary it is. So we're going to start off tonight by giving you a better map. And this is where it's going to be important for all of us to know that as we pursue this, we must adhere to the map and not let people change our map in the name of being our friends to tell us we'll have an easier time if we let them change our map. The scariest part first, the worst part of the map, I have to tell you about first, because I have to plant this in your consciousness. The world is running out of oil. The world is running out of oil. The universe took hundreds of millions of years to make X amount of oil, which was discovered or started to be used in the 1880s, 1890s. We've used half of all the oil on the planet in 100 years. Half of all the oil that it took hundreds of millions of years to build. What you see on the screen behind me is called the Hubbert curve. Just to tell you that all oil production follows a bell curve, and that's true whether I have one particular oil field. Like in Texas, you see in the movies, you know, the old movies like Giant, you know, they drill one well and the oil's under great pressure and they've got one well and they get the big gusher. So they drill, you know, 25, 30 wells, it's not gushing anymore, but the oil's right there, it comes right out. As the oil depletes, as it goes down into the reservoir, it's more expensive, it takes more energy, and it's harder to produce. But eventually, as you're going up, drilling more and more wells, more and more wells, more and more wells, but the level's going down and down, you reach a peak of production. And then it tapers off until a field is dry, and a field is deemed to be dry when it takes more energy to produce a barrel of oil than you get by burning it or consuming it. Very straightforward. The planet works the same way. And the science developed by Dr. Hubbert, has proven to be incredibly accurate, but it seems that we're ahead of his schedule. But the red line here says hydrocarbon production. Now that's oil and natural gas. The hydrocarbon production curve is scheduled to peak, he said, slightly before the year 2020. We may have already passed that peak now. There's new evidence coming, and I'm going to soon have an article by Professor Colin Campbell, who is a world-renowned 40-year expert from the oil industry, PhD, who's been lecturing at universities talking about, look, the species of petroleum man is going to perish. The petroleum man subspecies of the human race is going to become extinct. The green line here, the green line is population over time, and this line, the black line, is actually hydrocarbon production per capita. Now, here it says we are going to reach the peak right around 2005, let's say, or a little before. But these are actual use numbers, and you see that they're all moved this way of the peak. So we have actually passed the peak of hydrocarbon production per capita, and I just confirmed before I flew up here yesterday that the world passed the peak of oil production per capita, not oil and gas, just oil, in 1979. There never will be any more oil produced per person than there was in 1979. We're running out. But notice the population curve keeps growing, and demand is increasing almost exponentially. The United States passed its peak of production. Venezuela's passed its peak of production. The North Sea has passed its peak of production. Alaska has long since passed its peak of production. South America has. As a matter of fact, there are very few regions that have not passed their peak of production, meaning that as they go down, it's more and more expensive to get less and less oil out of the ground. And bear in mind also that not all oil in the ground is recoverable. It gets trapped in crevices, all the different little caverns don't connect. Sometimes it's granulated and there's water blocking it. They'll put in steam, but you can't get it all out. Tar sands are extremely expensive. Now, when you think of oil, almost everyone's first reaction is SUVs. It's so much more than that. Oil is 95% of all the plastics on the planet. Think of everything in your house. Your dashboard is plastic. Your food is wrapped in plastic. Your computer is plastic. You probably have plastic chairs in the office where you work, plastic desks. Everything you buy at the store is wrapped in plastic. That's all petroleum. That's all oil. More than that, all pesticides are petroleum-based, all commercial pesticides. And all commercial fertilizers are derived from ammonia, which is made from natural gas, oil's twin sister. And it is oil and gas that allow 1 acre of land that would normally produce 30 bushels of corn to produce 135 bushels of corn. That's what's feeding the world today. But more than that, you eat oil. You eat oil because when the agribiz goes out there, they have these great machines that are powered by internal combustion engines with oil that go out and till the soil and plant the seeds. Then you have some cases, electrically operated devices that derive electricity from your electrical generating station that's probably powered by natural gas or oil that produce the electricity. When they go out and fertilize it, they spray oil on it or natural gas on it. They spray it with pesticides, that's oil. When they harvest it, they drive another oil-powered machine out there to harvest it. Then they use an oil-powered machine to drive it to a processing plant which runs on oil. Then after they process it, they refrigerate it, which is derived from electricity produced by oil and natural gas. Then they drive it by oil to your supermarket, where you drive oil to get to the supermarket to get it, and it's wrapped in oil. We eat oil. There is no other energy that has been proven to be as efficient as oil. There are many other alternative technologies, but the major oil companies have brutally and ruthlessly suppressed them, and they are not immediate solutions. There are no panaceas. The young kids come up to me and say, we can go nuclear, we can go wind power, we can go hydrogen, we can do this. And I say, okay, what are you going to do? Are you going to throw 2.5 million auto workers out of work tomorrow in Detroit and tell them they can no longer make internal combustion engines? If you do, who's going to pay their mortgages? Who's going to buy their groceries at the supermarkets that hire people that depend upon the auto workers spending their paychecks? Who's going to change the electrical power generating stations all over this country that run on natural gas or petroleum overnight? How do you change that infrastructure? You can't. It's too late. There are many things we should and could be doing, but we are being blocked by a regime which understands one thing: as long as they control oil, they control the population of the planet. And they will control the population of the planet or kill it rather than relinquish control of the planet. This is more what it looks like. This is a great slide from a wonderful article that you can find referenced on my website called The Road to the Olduvai Gorge. Whoa, we got... Okay, 1930, Great Depression. This is oil consumption. Peak, World War II. Major peak in consumption. We just became energy pigs up until about the 1970s. That's the 70 oil crisis. Then we hit a slope and peak in production. And we are now on this slide. And this slide is leading to this cliff. And this cliff will result in blackouts. It will result in people burning candles. That's the science. It can be avoided. It can't be avoided. It can be ameliorated. It can be improved. It can be, there are many ways to deal with it, but not the way that it's being dealt with now. I said at Portland State, November 28th of last year, that what we are witnessing, as Dick Cheney said, in this war that will not end in our lifetimes, is a sequential war to control the last oil reserves on the planet, to make sure nobody else gets them. Because when the lights go out, there will be war, there will be violence, there will be bloodshed, there will be end of civilizations and nation states, and many people will die. And the people who run this country have decided that they will decide who will live and who will die. And that's what this is all about. Now, not all countries happen to peak at the same time. I mentioned that before. Now, 25% of all the oil in the world is in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. 11% of all the oil in the world is in Iraq. 9% of all the oil in the world is in Iran. You're going to see the significance of that. But the OPEC nations peak later. I told you that the rest of the world is already on a downslide. That's 2020. I apologize for the graphic. But OPEC peaks last. Remember that peaking last means it's cheaper to get your oil out of the ground. Look at the economy of the world around us. It's in great distress. Where do you find the cash to build monstrous pipelines? Where do you find the cash to go and build new refineries? You know, all the oil companies are downsizing. They know the world's running out of oil. They're downsizing and merging. That's why they're all merging. They know the world's running out of oil. But the OPEC nations peak last. And if uncontrolled, unoccupied, if they are, as Henry Kissinger said about 25 years ago, oil is too important to give to the Arabs. Okay. They peak last, which makes them the strongest, one of the key points of control on the planet. We will talk about Central Asia, which is key also to the military deployments and the events around September the 11th. Next slide. Now, a lot of people come running up to me and say, oh, come on, Mike, oil comes from magma. No, it doesn't. The space aliens are going to give us all the energy we can possibly use. No, that's not true. The Earth is a closed sphere. Logic tells us that. Go look at your refrigerator and see how much food grows in there. It doesn't happen. Then they come to me and they say, oh, they're finding new oil all the time. The estimates of reserves are being changed all the time. Well, if you read From the Wilderness, Dale Allen Pfeiffer, a wonderful writer, is our contributing editor for Energy. He's a geologist, and he knows a lot about oil. And he was doing research for one of his articles, and he was going through the U.S. Geological Survey reports, and he found this little footnote. We adjust our projection of reserves based upon anticipated demand. That is not science, okay? And it's the same thing with OPEC. Now, some people have noted that all the OPEC nations found all this new oil in the mid-80s. And that is not the truth. What the truth is that OPEC has a contract that they can only produce at a fixed percentage of barrels per day based upon their known reserves. So they all decided, because the U.S. drastically needed reduced oil prices after our market crash in 87 to recover, that, okay, we'll just rewrite our reserves. And that way we can produce more. That's exactly what Venezuela, Iran, Abu Dhabi, Kuwait, Iraq, and Saudi Arabia did. But look at Dubai. They didn't. And they have never changed their reserve projections, which have stayed constant. This is all bookkeeping. In other words, the books on oil are as cooked as the books on Enron. Absolutely.